Call the House Resources Committee meeting to order today. It's Friday, March 24th. We are in Capitol Room 124. Members present are Representative Mears, Representative Dibert, Representative Sadler, Representative McKay, myself, and we have Representative Armstrong on by phone. Representative Armstrong, can you hear me okay?
Yep, I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, great. If anything happens, please let us know so we can get you back online. We were supposed to be joined by Representative Rauscher, who told me he would call in at some point. Sorry, I'm talking too loud. All right. Now I'll lean forward more, you see. So we have a quorum to do business. I would like to recognize Representative Kronk, a distinguished guest in the audience. And I'd like to thank our staff today, Kevin, Zach, and committee aide, Ed. Please silence your cell phones. We have two items on today's agenda. First is consideration of Greg Wilson, Mr. Greg Wilson. Our first item is considering Greg, Mr. Wilson, to the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Mr. Wilson, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Chairman McKay.
Okay, great. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
My name is Gregory C. Wilson, presently acting commissioner at the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
Okay, Mr. Wilson, do you have any prepared remarks that you can inform us about your qualifications for your position?
I do.
Please proceed.
Okay. Well, good afternoon, Chairman McKay and members of the House Resource Committee. Thank you for taking time for my confirmation hearing today. In the next few minutes, I'll tell you why the role of geology commissioner at the AOGCC is a good fit with my experience, but more importantly, that it will serve the people of Alaska well. I did finish the remainder of Dan Seamount's term beginning September of last year and have now been reappointed to my own term. I've really enjoyed working with Commissioner Chmielewski these past months and now with Acting Commissioner and Chair Brett Huber, but especially want to compliment the dedication and experience of the staff at the AOGCC. The state of Alaska is very fortunate to have such qualified staff. For myself, I have a PhD in geology from the University of Wisconsin and over 31 years of experience as a petroleum geologist and manager with ARCO, Phillips, and ConocoPhillips, and I've seen a broad array of the industry in Alaska. While my career has been in private industry, public service has always been important to me. I've served on the state mapping board for the Alaska Division of Geological and Geophysical Surveys. I've served as president of the Alaska Geological Society, was the monthly newsletter editor for the Alaska Geological Society for many years, and I've been adjunct faculty at Alaska Pacific University. I've also organized several large geologic multi-state conventions in Alaska. When I organized the Prudhoe at 40 conference, I was even able to coax Governor Hickel out of retirement to address the convention, and it was the last time that we would see have such historic notables as Governor Hickel, Tom Marshall, Marv Mangus, Gil Mull, and John Sweet all on the same stage. Serving as a geology commissioner is a way for me to translate the skills and experiences I've built over a career to an opportunity to serve all the people of Alaska in an impactful way. The role is of critical importance to the issues of public safety, environment, conservation of resource, revenue, and now even climate with the CCUS bills. So how did I get here? In May of 2021, I was excited about an early retirement full of boating, fishing, and skiing, kind of typical Alaskan. I'd called Eagle River home since 1990, but now I have a place on the Kenai River. In 2021, shortly after I retired, I was humbled to be the recipient of the Marilyn Crockett Lifetime Achievement Award by the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, or AOGA. I have to believe that the attention that the award generated was partly responsible for inquiries I later received asking if I would be interested in Dan Seamount's position at the AOGCC as he was seeking retirement. So what experience do I bring to this role? The first half of my career was as an individual contributor. I started my career working Kuparuk field development and then the exploration and delineation of the Alpine field. It was the discovery of the Alpine field that in part led to the 1999 reoffering of the NPRA for leasing after a nearly decades-long hiatus. I was project geologist for a small team, ARPO team, that was successful in bidding on leases to form much of the core of what ConocoPhillips is developing to this day. I was project geologist for the subsequent MPRA exploratory drilling and data integration in the early 2000s, so I spent a lot of time at remote drill sites. That included the Lookout discovery, now GMT-1, and the Rendezvous discovery, now GMT-2. During this time, I also identified and named the Willow prospect and drilled its discovery well, which was Hunter A, way back in 2002. Before I moved on to management, I was also project geologist for ConocoPhillips' plans to drill in the Chukchi Sea, and I was editor of a comprehensive work on the geology of the Chukchi Sea. I have prospected for reservoir objectives in everything from the Endicott Formation, the oldest reservoir on the North Slope, to the youngest Brookian rocks, giving me a familiarity with virtually all the fields on the North Slope of Alaska. At the same time, I was conducting summer field programs in the Brooks Range, becoming a regional expert on the outcrop geology of the Brooks Range and the North Slope. During this time, I visited all the native villages, interacted with state and federal agencies, and became intimately familiar with operations on the North Slope. It was because of this that my employers entrusted me as a guide on numerous VIP visits to the North Slope, including some where I was the sole company representative. I even had federal agencies request me specifically to accompany them. From there, I moved into management, first directing a team that explored for new fields, both onshore and offshore, and then as the operations and technology manager. In this role, I not only managed a team of experts in petrophysics, seismic acquisition, seismic processing, and reservoir engineering, but also had responsibility over exploration operations, integrating everything from environmental studies to permitting, to ice road construction, to drilling, to site remediation, just working with a large multidisciplinary team. At this time, I had the luck of managing the delineation drilling operations of the Willow Field that I had identified many years prior. I also managed the acquisition of the first compressive seismic imaging in Alaska and onshore U.S., followed by five more such surveys. These seismic projects received received awards for innovation, safety, and environmental stewardship. During this time as operations manager, I interacted with the AOGCC, the DNR, the BLM, the DEC, U.S. Fish and Wildlife, and the North Slope Bureau. So challenges, I fully expect there to be challenges in the coming years at the AOGCC. The landscape of operators is evolving. Technology is always evolving. The AOGCC is taking on new roles with carbon capture legislation, but this all makes the AOGCC a very exciting and impactful agency to be a part of, and I'm looking to do my part. If Willow and Pippa move ahead, Alaska has its chance at a bridge to the economy that comes next. We in Alaska have to use this time wisely, and I want to be a part of that. So I thank you for your time, and would be pleased to entertain questions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Wilson. I'd like to announce that Representative Rauscher has also joined us by phone. So are there any questions for Mr. Wilson? Representative Sadler, please.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Wilson, thanks for joining us tonight or today, and thanks for your service to the industry in Alaska. You've had a good history in the oil patch in Alaska. What kinds of important issues do you anticipate addressing during your term as the geologist member of the AOGCC? What's going to consume most of your days and some of your nights in the next 3 years?
So the routine business is we process the permits for drilling and for the sundry notices, kind of the bread and butter for the industry in Alaska. But on occasion, there come up issues where we have to resolve the disputes, including issues of correlative rights, aquifer protection, well spacing issues, conservation of resource. Those are all potential issues. And then a big issue will be if there's offtake of gas from Prudhoe and Point Thompson on the North Slope in determining what is the best conservation of resource and the amount of gas offtake. So those are some of the issues I think we'll address in the coming years.
Okay. Anything else, Representative Sadler?
Actually, yes, if I could. Sure. Seeing other questions, I'll jump in again. So I understand that your work in the AGCC, through the chair, is above below ground in the subsurface, but if you are willing to offer any thoughts on the quality, age, capacity of the above ground infrastructure that makes the subsurface development possible in our oil and gas industry. If it's beyond your canter, you don't want to comment, I respect that, but just appreciate your thoughts given your background in business.
Yeah, Representative Sadler through the chair. It is beyond my expertise, but I am aware that we do have an aging infrastructure on the North Slope, and that does impact the AOGCC in that it requires more vigilance as we look at sundry work on existing wells, aging wells, the condition of each of the wells. And so I think it does impact the work that we do here at the AOGCC. And like I said, we'll just require ever more vigilance as these as the infrastructure continues to age.
So another question, Representative Sadler, you're okay.
I would ask one more with the chair's indulgence. I'm raising issues that I know that others might want to raise too. Just real quick, through the chair, okay. Mr. Wilson, your thoughts, if you would, about the likelihood of ease for the state of Alaska obtaining primacy for Class 6 injection wells on the North Slope should we proceed with the governor's carbon capture and sequestration efforts?
Yeah, ease is probably not the word I want to use, though, but I think it is definitely doable. The path has been paved by North Dakota and by Wyoming and others in the queue at this point. And so there is a framework out there for us to operate within, and I think it's going to take much less time than these first few states that paved the way. We've had interactions with Kevin Connors, who has been, I believe, an expert witness in front of your committee. He's been here at the AOGCC. He's talked us through the North Dakota regulations that satisfy the EPA's requirements. And we believe that working closely with the states that have achieved primacy, that it is something that's entirely doable here for the AOGCC, and it's going to take a lot less time than it initially did for North Dakota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Representative Armstrong on the phone has a question.
Thank you, Chair. And through the chair, Mr. Wilson, you've had an incredible career. Thank you for being willing to serve. As I'm sure you're aware, there was news this morning, again, about the ConocoPhillips gas leak, and I would just love to hear your perspective on what you think we could be doing to ensure that those types of leaks are prevented, or if they do happen, that they are dealt with as quickly as possible. We'd just love to hear your perspective on that.
Okay, Representative Armstrong through the chair. What I will say, first of all, is that with regard to that particular issue, I did recuse myself from the hearing, and so I won't be a part of the I wasn't a part of the meeting yesterday, nor the future deliberations on it. But with regard to those types of issues, I think it's going to require close work between both industry and the AOGCC that we are able to identify potential problem intervals that may not necessarily be quantifiable as pay at first look. But, you know, based on the histories that we have, make sure that we identify such issues and work with the operators to see that the cementing operations and, you know, other barriers of safety will prevent future such issues from happening.
Representative Armstrong, follow-up, or are you okay?
No follow-up. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Mears.
Thank you, through the chair. As you know, there's a lot to keep up with in our building, as you've got a lot to keep up with your role, and I'm not entirely sure all the background on the leak issues, but when you're talking about, you know, cementing, I'm not yet up to speed on the effects of climate change on the infrastructure up on the North Slope. And if that's something that we're starting to see impact that infrastructure and might make future have future safety concerns, I don't know if that's something that you have any comfort in answering.
Representative Mears through the chair. What I will say is a lot of the issues that we hear about melting of the permafrost in association with the developing fields is more associated with the heat generated from the wells, and it's a local issue to the wells melting permafrost very locally. Now, in a more general sense, and I'm not the expert here, but melting permafrost, should it occur, and as it occurs, is going to be an issue for facilities on the North Slope in maintaining the integrity of the facilities and of the well bores. But right now, the particular issues that we hear about with regard to melting of the permafrost is more localized to the wells and the heat being generated and all efforts being made to keep that heat from working its way out into the permafrost. But it is an issue that's being addressed on the North Slope.
Okay. Okay, Mr. Wilson, we'll wrap this up here shortly, but I think you spoke about the North Slope a lot. I think we would probably be remiss if we didn't talk about Cook Inlet a little bit. Could you maybe talk a little bit about Cook Inlet? And I'm mainly concerned with the gas potential, natural gas potential down there, and your experience in the inlet and what you could bring to that discussion.
Chairman McKay, certainly. I have never worked the field operations in Cook Inlet, but what I will say is that I've been kind of a student of all operations in Alaska, and I have taken Phillips and ConocoPhillips on multiple field trips to look at the geology local to those areas, tour the fields, tour the LNG facilities, and even gone by boat to look at some of the rocks in outcrop on the south side of Kachemak Bay and other places. So I have been a student of those areas. In addition, I, as manager of operations and technology, I had a role over all the data that ConocoPhillips owned, and that included all the seismic data. And so as ConocoPhillips was divesting of its assets in the Cook Inlet area, I was a part of all the entitlement work that happened with regard to the seismic so that we could transfer title of as much of the seismic as possible to the new operators or to the gas line authorities as they look for potential hazards and that sort of thing. So I do have a familiarity with the geology of Cook Inlet and the gas fields and oil fields. I am keenly aware of its role in how we heat our homes and generate our electricity here in Alaska. And as a resident now of the Kenai Peninsula Borough, I'm also keenly aware of the employment opportunities and those sorts of things. And so, like I said, I have not specifically worked the fields in Cook Inlet, but I have a reasonable familiarity, and I am keenly aware of the issues around gas resources. Oil resources is more an economic issue. It's great to have the oil production out of Cook Inlet. The gas resources is a critical issue for the residents of South Central, in particular with heating our homes and generating our electricity. And I would do whatever I can to see that issues are resolved and that we don't have a disruption of services in South Central.
Okay, thank you for that, Mr. Wilson. So we do have one person from the public that would like to testify, and Mr. Dan Seamount, can you hear me?
Yes, Chair McKay, I can hear.
Okay, Mr. Seamount, if you'd like to give your comments on the candidacy of Mr. Wilson, please proceed.
Okay, well, thank you, Chair McKay, Co-Chair Rauscher, and members of the House Resources Committee. I recently retired as the Geologist Commissioner for the AOGPC after 22 and a half years of service for the people of the state of Alaska. That's almost one-third of the time that AOGPC has existed. I'd like to wholeheartedly support Dr. Wilson for confirmation as AOGPC Geologist Commissioner. He's extremely qualified for the position. He's already outlined his qualifications, and they're extremely impressive. To me, they're impressive to me, and he actually sort of humbles me. But along with his experience in oil and gas exploration and development, he's had much prior interaction with the AOGPC at least 23 years. I've worked with him, and he knows the AOGPC's got a good head start because he knows the regulations, statutes, policies, and workings of the agency. So I respectfully ask the committee to forward his name for confirmation. I really think that the team of commissioners Jesse Chmielewski, Greg Wilson, and Brett Huber will be one of the best in AOGCC's 67-year-long history. And they'll do their best to protect the public interest in oil, gas, and geothermal to the fullest. And I thank you for listening to my testimony. And if you have any more questions, I'm here.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Seamount, very much. And are there any further questions from the committee? All right, seeing none, let the record reflect that in accordance with AS 39.05.080, the House Resource Committee held a hearing on Greg Wilson. Signing the committee report testifies to the members' participation in this hearing and does not reflect the intent of any member to vote for or against the confirmation of Mr. Wilson during joint session. Mr. King will pass the committee report around as we move to the next item. So, Mr. Wilson, thank you so much. I think we're very fortunate to have a man of your credentials serving the state of Alaska, and I wish you the best of luck.
Chairman McKay, committee, thank you for your time, and thank you for the kind words.
Hey, Tom, I can't sign, but
support the guy. I'm sorry, Ed. Go ahead, Representative Rauscher.
Hey, I can't sign the report, but I just thought I don't object to the guy coming out of committee. And so I just thought for my two cents.
Okay, thank you, Representative Rauscher, for that. All right, now we will move to the next topic, House Bill 104, Expedited Timber Sales. I will now bring House Bill 104 back before the committee. This is our second hearing on this bill. My goal for today is to take public testimony, get additional information from the administration, and set the bill aside as we work on a committee substitute. Note that we are currently working with the administration and the timber industry to ensure that the version of this bill that leads our committee will properly balance the management of our timber resources for sustainable development, public safety, and appropriate conservation. I will now open public testimony on House Bill 104. Does any member of the public wish to testify in the room? So we have no one in the present in the room to testify. So now we will go to the people that are online on the phone waiting to testify. So at first we will go to Tessa Axelson. Tessa, can you hear me okay?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Ms. Axelson, would you please state your name and your affiliation for the record and begin your testimony? And we'll limit testimony today to 2 minutes per person, and I will, at the two-minute mark, I will ask you to wrap up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of House Resources Committee. For the record, my name is Tessa Axelson. I'm the Executive Director for the Alaska Forest Association, commonly referred to as AFA. AFA is one of Alaska's oldest member trade organizations. It's my privilege to represent a variety of members across the state of Alaska who have an interest in the forest products industry. And today we'd like to provide general support with two primary discussion items for House Bill 104. First and foremost, we'd like to refer to and share with the committee formally on the record the benefit that we all receive as Alaskans when we meet our constitutional obligation to develop our resources, and specifically for the purposes of this conversation, those resources related to the timber industry and the forest products industry. We as an industry rely significantly on sales that are provided through the Department of Natural Resources and the Division of Forestry. Those sales and the supply of continued sales allow our industry to continue to provide millions of dollars directly into communities across Southeast Alaska to ensure that we utilize the secondary and tertiary components of our local economies through supporting transportation, freight costs, local grocers, equipment suppliers, barge and tug operators, and the efforts of stevedores who work on loading and unloading many of the ships that our products are placed on. In addition, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, we are incredibly proud about the fact that we actively in a variety of communities across Southeast Alaska are directly providing year-round family wage jobs to folks in our industry, and that those are jobs that also ensure that we have local mortgages, kiddos that are in schools, and support for our tax base. So all that can be done to continue to supply the industry provides direct economic benefit to our communities. And then finally, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, the other important component is that we as an industry take very seriously continued management of our forests. One of the most effective ways for us to continue to address this in Alaska as we see fire concerns and infestations across the forest is to allow for and ensure that we are managing a healthy forest and utilizing dead and dying trees instead of allowing the stored carbon in those trees to once again escape into the atmosphere. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for this opportunity to provide public comment, and I would be happy to entertain any of your questions.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Axelson. Do we have any questions for Representative Sadler?
Thank you, through the chair, Ms. Axelson. Just curious, from your perspective as a director of the Timber Industry Association, where do you think this, should this bill become law, where do you think its provisions would first be applied? Whether by region or by type of sale or by type of tree, just to help us understand.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the Forest Association Board has not taken a formal position on the bill with regard to the component that you're requesting. I would ask your patience for us in the coming week as we develop some specific responses on the bill so that we can get back to you on that.
Follow-up, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Nathan, while you're here, Ms. Axelson. We have heard for years about beetle kill and the opportunity to have the forest AFA in front of us, even telephonically, to ask, what is the general attitude of the timber industry towards beetle-killed timber? Is it something that's a resource that should be exploited quickly? Is it something that's just a casualty of regular forest life? Just what's the industry's thoughts on beetle-kill timber?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, so beetle kill specifically for our industry is something that we're seeing in specific locations in the state of Alaska. I know that down on the Kenai Peninsula, you're seeing utilization of some of that wood by some of the micro mill operators. And there is a need from our perspective to address those types of trees that have those infestations because they do pose fire risk in certain parts of the state.
Okay, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. If you're looking for another question, I've got one.
Okay.
Just through the chair, Ms. Ashford. In general, can you offer your opinion on the speed with which the state of Alaska's Division of Forestry offers timber for sale now before any changes considered by this bill? How quickly do timber sales come up, and what's your views on that?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, from the perspective of industry, the Division of Forestry is working actively to move sales out based on the current process they have. We would like to see an opportunity for there to be longer-term sales provided to our members. That's beneficial for us as we look to meet the needs of our customers. And then additionally, for there to be enough sales that are cleared through the internal processes that allow for sales to be put out on a longer term so that we have sales that are ready to move forward and industry knows what those sales will be into the future. Because the supply component, Representative Sadler, is one of the most critical issues for our industry. We need anywhere from 18 to 32 months of supply in advance to meet our needs. And so ensuring that there is speedy movement by the division to follow their processes, but also get sales out in the different regions is really important to us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Okay, seeing no further questions, thank you very much, Ms. Axelson, for your testimony. We now move to Amanda Hammy. I hope I said that right, Amanda, of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council. Can you hear me all right, Amanda?
Yes, Mr. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So
great.
Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Miranda Hom. I'm a lifelong resident here on Prince of Wales, and I'm calling in today from Powak, Alaska, to testify on behalf of Southeast Alaska Conservation Council, Council's Forest Program, otherwise known as SEAC as well. CF strongly opposes HB 104 for the following reasons. This bill would allow state timber sales to be offered quickly in any area that has been threatened or may be affected by fire, insects, or disease, while there is no specifics or definitions in the bill as far as for what information or scientific methods will be used to decide if an area is considered threatened. HB 104 would also bypass public comment and give the DNR commissioner ultimate discretion in deciding to expedite timber sales in any area considered threatened or deemed affected. In addition, Alaska already has a salvage sale law that provides for these types of timber sales in a two-year window. Under this bill, it seems as if the state timber sales would not include any opportunity for public comment, and there is no sale size limitation. And to close, the public already struggles to have a voice in the commenting process. Last year, HB 98 would have also eliminated important public processes. HB 104 is just another bill that will bypass that public comment process. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Okay. Any questions for? Okay. You good? No? Okay. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Hami, for your testimony. We appreciate it. I'll now move to Mr. Joe Young, the owner of Young's Timber Incorporated from Tok. Mr. Young, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, my name is Joe Young, owner of Young's Timber Inc. in Tok. And thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. McKay, and the rest of the House Resource Committee members for allowing me to testify on House Bill 104. And I must say I'm a very big supporter of it, House Bill 104. Young's Timber Inc. has been in business since 1993 and has four types of sawmills producing a wide range of value-added products with 12 employees. Three-year timber sale contracts simply do not work for value-added producers. Business planning and financing is almost impossible unless the producers can show that they have a reliable, steady, long-term supply of timber for replacing either existing machines or financing for expansions. And I'd also like to say that the state of Alaska's three different forest regions is also under attack by insect and disease. Each of these Alaskan regions have overmature, dying, stagnant, and dense forests, creating stressed-out forests. These stressed-out forests are producing pheromones that are attracting these insects. Insects along with these are killing their trees, which cause hazardous fire danger situations with associated fire suppression costs to the state. The DNR commissioner, having HB 104 in his toolbox, can now get timber harvesting expedited for forest health, the protection of Alaska citizens from fire, reducing the wildlife fire protection costs, and provide a long-term reliable supply of timber to Alaska value-added producers. I recommend that the House Resources Committee pass HB 104. And I want to make a couple of comments real quick on Representative Sadler's questions. Right now, it takes a year to put the five-year schedule of timber sales together. And then once it's in the gets approved by public opinion or public response, it takes another 48 months to get it out to be able to put up the timber sale. And then it takes probably another year for the Division of Forestry to put the sale up. So, you know, by the time you request a sale to be put into the five-year plan, it's almost 4 years later if they procrastinate before a sale even comes up. Like in the Tok area, we haven't had a timber sale put up since 2019. And so anyway, those are my comments, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate my time to talk.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Young. I'll count the last part of that as a preemptive answer to Mr. Representative Sadler's question that I knew was coming. How's that?
Thank you.
Representative Sadler, thank you. Well, have another question.
Mr. Chair, then I'll back up and take a different approach. I appreciate it. Mr. Young, thanks for calling in on this. We heard earlier that there was insufficient opportunity for public comment on timber sales. And so I guess I'd offer you the opportunity to express your view on the amount of public input on timber sales now and whether you believe that under this bill there would be too much, not enough, or just the right amount of opportunity for public comment on expedited timber sales.
Well, I think the public comment would stay the same, actually. If you do, first, you have to put the five-year schedule of timber sale together, and that takes time. Then it has to go to the Tama Valley State Forest Advisory Committee for approval. And in that time, there's when it goes out for approval after the Tama Valley State Forest reviews it and asks for public comments, then it's out for another 30 days of public comments. And then when they put the best interest findings together in a FLUP, it goes out for public comments again. So I don't. So I think the public has plenty of time to review, if they're interested, to review the schedule of five-year timber sales, and the process that that's put in by law is that has to be done. My understanding with the expedited timber sale is that it just jabs the Division of Forestry in the ass to move a little bit faster.
Okay, thank you for that answer, Mr. Young. We'll make sure that one stays on the record. Okay, I think there was an acronym used that I'll the FLUP is Forest Land Use Plan, just so everybody, for the record. FLUP is Forest Land Use Plan. Okay. Any more questions? Representative Sadler.
One more brief one from Mr. Young. Again, it's nice to have a person who's in the business before us. So we also heard in a previous testifier that there is uncertainty as to how much forest land might be available for harvest. Mr. Young, in your opinion, are we at risk of allowing too much timber to be cut in Alaska?
No, I don't think so, because I think in the Tana Valley State Forest, I don't even think we're at 10% of the allowable cut. So we could do a lot more harvesting and stay well within the yearly allowable cut that's allowed.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Young. Any further questions? All right, seeing none, we will move to Mr. Parker Rickers. Mr. Rickers, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay, please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony, Mr. Rickers.
Great. My name is Parker Rickers, and I'm the Woodmiser Sawmill Representative for Alaska. My business is directly affected by the availability of timber for customers that are primarily private users, although we have had customers like Joe Young in the past who are professional users. I'm sitting, as I testify here, in a tract of land on the hillside of Anchorage where it is being cleared and the timber used for lumber, et cetera, but it's to mitigate the fire danger here on the Anchorage hillside. There are a number of things about HB 104 that I think are worthy of consideration. One is, like I just mentioned, is this fire reduction. And that translates into property and personal safety. And as Joe Young pointed out, the habitat of our forest needs to be kept healthy, and having dead and dying trees decaying does nothing to improve our carbon footprint here. And also, I believe that by clearing a lot of this out, we can get rid of or mitigate a lot of the beetle damage by moving their habitat away from them. I have a customer that just purchased a sawmill, and they're part of a village that's near Marshall, Alaska. And let me just finish by telling you one of the advantages we would be able to share with them if HB 104 was approved. They told me the other day that a sheet of plywood in their new village costs $130. A 2x4 that's 8 foot long costs $65. Oof. And their village council is tasked with not just moving a village, but creating a new village. And for a small traditional corporation like they have, the council there, that is almost an insurmountable task given the cost of building materials. And yet this area is rich in timber. which in my mind should be made available to the corporation and to the residents for personal use. So there are many other good parts about this bill, but you've heard excellent testimony. And I just want to finish by saying that I've probably sold probably at least 2,000 sawmills to residents all over Alaska, mostly for personal use. And they would appreciate, in my mind, and in my opinion, they would appreciate HB 104 being passed.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rickers. Any questions for Mr. Rickers? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to Cheryl Fecko. I hope I pronounced your name correctly. Ms. Fecko, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me, Chair McKay?
I certainly can. Thank you. Please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
Yes. My name is Cheryl Fecko, and I'm calling in from Craig today on Prince of Wales Island in Southeast. I am representing myself, and I want to thank you, the Chair McKay, and the House Resources Committee for having the opportunity to comment on this bill. I worry a bit if HB 104 does become law as written that the public may have little or no opportunity to comment on state timber sales if they become expedited. And for this and a few other reasons that I'll list below, I oppose HB 104. I do understand the need to protect property from forest fires or to prevent the spread of serious disease epidemics in forest stands. But I'm really not so sure this is the intent of the bill. My gut feeling about HB 104 is that it intends to kind of bypass the public process in order to access timber outside of other state harvest programs. And this would serve to kind of shortcut an already limited process for public and other agency input and review. I worry even more about the possible lack of consideration for habitat and water quality concerns when timber sales are fast-tracked. I'd be curious to know what consultation and coordination there will be with other state agencies like ADF&G and DEC to ensure that critical habitat for salmon and other important wildlife species important to subsistence users will be left intact. Prince of Wales Island, where I live here in Southeast Alaska, is already a fragmented patchwork of land, including a state-owned forest, University of Alaska and Mental Health Trust land, Native Village and Regional Corporation lands, and Tongass National Forest land. This island has seen decades of intensive harvest, and I worry about the consequences of expediting state timber sales that are outside of other existing timber programs and the impact those sales would have on an already fractured landscape. I kind of feel that HB 104 may not be needed to accomplish what the state has in mind. From what I understand, we do have salvage laws that should apply to these conditions without sacrificing public input, habitat degradation, and the time that's needed to do things for the right reason. So I do thank you for the opportunity to comment.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Fecko. Representative Sadler has a question for you if you're still on.
Sure. I mean, I'll give it a shot.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, Ms. Fecko, could you point where in the Bill 104 before us that you see a risk that expedited timber sales would bypass public comment process or the Forest Practices Act?
I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead. Finish up. You wanted me to point out where you feel in the bill itself it kind of shortcuts the process, public process?
That was my concern. To my reading of the bill, this does not obviate or bypass any of the existing protections for forest management, for streams, for wildlife habitat, or for public comment. But if you can point to me where in the bill it does it, I'd appreciate knowing.
Well, yeah, I guess maybe how I kind of interpreted it, I'm not really experienced at this, but I think that it leaves so much discretion for the commissioner once a timber sale is thought to be not necessarily impacted by fire or disease or infestation, but the threat of. And so what I fear is that with that being kind of determined by just the commissioner alone, That threat, I think, to me, is not clearly defined.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Chair. For the record, I'm not seeing any place in this bill language that would obviate any of the continuing existing protections of habitat or of public comment or some of the other concerns that Ms. Fecko raised in her testimony.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Fecko, for your testimony. We appreciate it. Now I'll move to, looks like Andrew Traxler.
Hello.
Yeah, Andrew, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can hear you fine.
Okay, great. Mr. Traxler, so please state your name and your affiliation and begin your testimony.
My name is Andrew Traxler, and I own the sawmill business located in Egg Lake, Alaska, called Papoose Milling. I guess I would start my testimony by restating exactly the same thing that Mr. Young did. Young is in a different region than I am. Never met the man, but listening to his testimony, I wanted to shake his hand. So I guess the first thing that I want to say to add to his testimony is that, in a way, I want to say that we need your protection. Many of us sawmill business owners here in Alaska, we are small businesses, mom and pop type small businesses. And everybody wants more and more of the public comment period. And what happens is that we battle lobbyists and groups that are highly funded beyond our means, and they spread so much disinformation about our forest to bring out the public against us that we can't compete. We can't compete with the timber sale process. We can't get the timber sale, even though we're Alaskans producing for Alaskans. That is one of our biggest challenges, and this expedited process may make it feasible for us. And I would definitely want to see the timber sales extended to a longer time frame so that we could have stability in business, knowing that we'll have logs for another year.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Traxler. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Traxler of Papoose Milling? I should point out, Mr. Traxler, that Representative McCabe, who's not with us today, I understand lives near you.
Yes, he is my neighbor.
Okay, well, you tell us if he does anything that you don't approve of. We'll correct that.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And I really appreciate what you folks are doing to try to make it so that we can produce for this industry. Presently, I produce over about 30% of what I'm asked to do because of a lack of log supply.
Okay, so I see no further questions for Mr. Traxler, and I also see no further names on the list to testify. So with that, I will close public testimony. Now, I have a few remarks with HB 104. We will set the bill aside. Despite some of the testimony we've heard today, I would like to point out that our forests are natural resources. We have a constitutional obligation to utilize, develop, and conserve those resources for the maximum benefit of our people. The challenge we face is balancing the responsibilities to develop and conserve, which are opposite goals. That is why we allow timber harvests according to a sustainable yield principle. Taking more than the sustainable yield would result in overdevelopment. Taking less than the sustainable yield would be over-conservation. I'm afraid we may currently be in over-conservation territory as the state is not providing an adequate amount of supply to sustain an actively managed forest. HB 104 is intended to help strike that balance. It is not a timber grab, and it will not threaten our state forests. Anything we do in this building works within the parameters set forth in our Constitution. I understand the concerns raised by some of the testifiers today, and I want to assure the public that the legislative intent of this bill is for our state resources to be managed appropriately. I am holding HB 104 in committee until we have a committee substitute ready to discuss. In closing, is there any other business? Representative Mears.
I guess I'm a process person on this. Mr. Chair, one of the things that we heard from testimony today was of those enjoying the public process for public testimony is there's a rub on having some and not having enough. Since we are expecting a substantial committee substitute to this, I guess it's a reminder to folks that there's opportunity for written testimony through email. Is that the remaining public process available to folks through the remainder of this bill?
I believe that's correct, Representative Mears. And if I recall correctly, the email is house.resources@akledge.gov. I think I've got it memorized by now. So it's, if anyone is listening in, house.resources@akledge.gov is where you can send written testimony. Okay. Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would just note for the record that Representative McCabe, who is you spoke of earlier, is back in district. He is not in our committee table, but he's back in Big Lake attending the opening of an important local institution, that being the Houston High School. So I'm sure he's with us in spirit.
All right. Thank you for that, Representative Sadler. So seeing no other business on this Friday afternoon, I will not hold you here any longer. Representative Dibert?
I'm good.
So the next committee meeting will be held at 1 o'clock on Monday, March 27th. So we are now adjourned at 1:55 p.m. Thank you.